Welcome to Inspired Living with Mark Lanehart, the Intuitive Prospector. Every Wednesday, Mark, along with his special guests, will explore thought-provoking topics and ideas that promote creativity, self-help, healing, happiness, and well-being to inspire you on your spiritual journey. Each week, Mark will discuss different paths to achieving a more spiritual, balanced, happy, and healthy lifestyle. Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual. Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. Mark is a tested, certified, and professional spiritual medium, metaphysical teacher, healer, and spiritual advisor with a spiritual practice based in Seattle, Washington. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
It is important to me to have hope because that's my job as a parent, to have hope for my kids, that we're not going to leave them in a world that is in shambles, that's a chaotic place, that's a dangerous place. That is the quote from the famous film director James Cameron, who directed some of the highest grossing films of all time, including Avatar and the sequel to Avatar. And today we're going to be talking all about climate change. We're going to be talking about our world. So good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you may be in this magical, magnanimous, magnificent, majestic, marvelous, metaphysical, miraculous, mind-awakening, mind-boggling, and mind-blowing planet of ours. This is Inspired Living Radio. I am your host, Mark Lanehart, the Intuitive Prospector, here with you yet again for another soul adventure and inspiring episode to explore, discuss, and discover the many diamonds within each and every one of us and the many diamonds in our world that have yet to be revealed. So get comfortable, grab your favorite drink, kick back, sit back, or lie back, take a nice, deep, healing, peaceful, and cleansing breath, and let us prospect together as we discuss in today's show topic, a novel called The Silent Count. I always like to say, dare to dream, dare to explore, dare to live, and discover that diamond within. And I am your host here today, and we're going to give a big shout out and a thank you to all of our inspired listeners from around the globe, the universe, and beyond. My team and I here at Inspired Living Radio are so very humbled and grateful to you for listening, downloading, subscribing, leaving reviews, and voting to make Inspired Living Podcast a best 100-ranked inspirational show to follow and listen to for the last 3 years running now. We do appreciate you. If you have not yet subscribed, liked, or followed the show, there is always time to do so over on our main social media platform at Facebook. Just look for Inspired Living Radio and Podcast. Our Instagram and Twitter pages under Inspired For Us, that's the number 4, and our YouTube channel, Inspired Living Radio. And we are now streaming through Audible or your favorite podcasting platforms, or you can simply say, Alexa, open up Inspired Living Podcast to play the latest episode. So are we ready to go prospecting? Let's go. We like to say you are the inspired and the inspiration. So let's be inspired, let's inspire others, and let's inspire before we expire. So today we're welcoming to the show E.A. Smermaldo to talk about her first novel. So I'm going to congratulate her right away. This is her first novel that she's written. And it's actually what she calls a cli-fi novel, which is climate change fiction thriller. And it's called The Silent Count. So I want to read a little bit about EA's journey and how you can get the book and also her website. And it is an expertise that blends with real-world inspired drama. EA is a native of Washington, D.C. She's seen how politics corrupt and skews human perspective on what's right and wrong. She understands how closely humanity is to the brink of a real climate crisis, and she is determined to bring to light how important it is for us to trust and love one another. Think about that concept, trust and love one another. The Silent Count is a cli-fi climate change fiction thriller, and it opens up, the book opens up with an admiral talking about, quote, some said the world would end in fire, others said it would end in ice, we now know better, and that's from The Silent Count. A little bit about her background, E.A. Smermaldo is a novelist, a musician, and a nuclear engineer. She uses real science in her debut novel, The Silent Count, and again, blending that real-world-inspired drama with her expertise. The Silent Count, like I said, is a climate change fiction thriller, And it really is set upon a young nuclear engineer that comes up with a daring plan to combat climate change, but then faces unintended consequences as she fights for her family, her career, and for humanity. E.A. Smeraldo is a nuclear engineer with a creative streak. She also is a Washington Area Music Association Award-nominated singer and songwriter and has won prizes in writing competitions sponsored by the Bethesda Literary Festival and the International Screenwriters Dig. After placing in the letter, she optioned the treatment for her screenplay, Blood Like Water, with X-Ray Media, and it's premised on real silence. The Silent Count is her debut novel. You can learn more about her journey, and her book at easmeraldo.com, or you can find the book at Amazon. We've also placed both links over on our Facebook page, Inspired Living Radio and Podcast. And with that, I'm going to take a quick pause, grab a breath, and welcome EA to the show. Welcome to Inspired Living, my friend.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the really wonderful introduction. I was just thinking of what you were saying about, I guess I'm from the other Washington, on the other side of the country. So when we're talking about trusting people, I think right now we can see what's happening when people don't trust each other in our government and in our world. So yeah, that's a big part of the novel.
Yeah. And my mantra has always been trust, but verify with my journey.
Oh, yeah.
I always try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I always like to, use that verification. And that's something I've just in my journey, trust, but verify. And you're correct. In our day and age with all of the internet, the social media, the misinformation, the disinformation, the cognitive dissonance, the gaslighting, it's really hard to know who to trust and what to trust in our reality. And everything that's going on. But let's talk about your background as a nuclear engineer. I imagine that you served in the Navy?
No. No.
No. Okay.
Well, during the times when I was in school, this was before, I think now they do let women serve on nuclear submarines, but mm-hmm. back in the day they didn't. But I think that women could serve on aircraft carriers. So there are some women who came up in the ranks of the Navy, but no, I studied engineering, University of Maryland, which has a little toy nuclear reactor on campus, and I learned how to operate it. And then most of what you learn professionally. So that's how I came up through the ranks, but we had lots of Navy nukes in school and in my career, many, 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 and they will ruin every curve in your classes, but God bless them. Those people know what they're doing. You don't have anything to worry about with our nuclear Navy. They're ruling the seas out there.
Yeah. And that's interesting to learn. Cause I always, I guess they always, what they say about assumptions, but I just assumed based on, cause there's not a lot of outlets for nuclear access. Right. So in my mind, I was just thinking some sort of military, pathway for having a background as a nuclear engineer. And you're right. When you got your BS in engineering, I don't think aircraft carriers at that time in the Navy allowed women on subs. So times have changed though. Right. So, it's just definitely an interesting path because I don't have a lot of guests on my show that have a background in nuclear engineering. That's just not something that we talk about. So when I saw this, I was like, okay, I got to talk to this young lady and understand, how she came to write this book. So let's get into some of the questions that our listeners out there might be interested in learning about, nuclear weapons, because we hear a lot of, nuclear talk these days and things going on around in our world. And how can nuclear weapons, since you have a background in this, how can nuclear weapons change our world? How could they change our weather patterns? And how can they impact us as a species here on planet Earth?
Well, in a way, the novel is a bit of a satire, but the science in it is real. So in the novel, it sits slightly in the future, so it has a sort of a science fiction element. And things go very badly for the climate to the point where this young woman has this idea. She's a nuclear engineer, and she's done her PhD thesis, and she's done it on an aspect of real science. So So when I was in college, the first page of my Introduction to Nuclear Engineering textbook said that there are peaceful applications for nuclear weapons, including things like extracting oil from shale, building harbors, and it literally said if you can also use them to eliminate certain mountain ranges to create more favorable weather patterns. And at the time, I thought, someone needs to write a crazy science fiction, you know, with this as the premise. Mm-hmm. Nobody did, so I thought, well, this is going to have to be me. And I think as time went on, you know, more and more people were talking about the climate. I thought, well, that's an intersection of a couple of big ideas there. So, you know, they decided to use this, you know, geoengineering using nuclear weapons to do something to create more advantageous climate conditions. As you can imagine, it's a thriller. So things, this, you know, they don't just blow up the mountain range and then everything is like hunky-dory. It's all heck breaks loose.
Yeah, and what I like, I know that you call it a fiction story, and it's a cli-fi, which I thought was very creative to have this climate, you know, climate fiction story. But you know, over time and doing these shows and in my own journey, I soon realized that science fiction. I go back to Star Trek. I go back to Gene Roddenberry, who always talked about. You know, it's now been determined that he actually was able to see into the future, and a lot of the writings that he did, including Star Trek, would be started out as science fiction, but over time becomes science fact. And you always have that, you know, that dilemma: is art imitating life, or is life imitating art? You know, it's that, you know, and your book starts off right in the beginning, chapter one, T-10. And you talk about, you know, quote, some of the world would end in fire. Others said it would end in ice, but we know better. And then you just get right into the Brigadier General Alexander Fallsworth. So I'm always curious when people write books like this, do you base your characters, I know they're fiction, but in your mind, do they have any relation to your own journey or people that you knew when you were studying nuclear engineering and going through your soul adventures of life?
Well, certainly there are some realities in the book that are, I mean, they're fictionalized, of course, but, you know, I did used to work in the federal government as many as, you know, I live in the Washington, D.C. area. So yes. And there is an element of this, you know, things get exaggerated in fiction, but there's lots of disgruntled federal employees. and in a way, the Silent Count does give you a sense of, you know, things like, you know, she goes into her very first, you know, they do your, in the government, they do your appraisal, your performance appraisal. So she went in and got her performance appraisal, and they said, well, you know, your work is great, but you need to be more of a team player. And she's like, well, I don't really work with other people. And they said, I just got here. How can I take initiative? Things like that. And they say, well, you should go to happy hour or be, you know, somewhere to get to know your, you know, things like that. Like, be a leader. Mm-hmm. Like, well, how do I be a leader? So this is the kind of thing that happens in the government. And then they, you know, they have to give somebody a lower score. And so she gets a lower score. And she's always been a straight-A student. So she's a little horrified by this. So these various things happen to her as she's going along that put her in a position where she doesn't really think twice when someone comes to her and wants to use her crazy thesis in reality to create more favorable weather patterns and do something about the climate. You know, she thinks I've got to improve. I've got to get my career off the ground and fulfill this dream of mine. And so that's where, you know, you have these, superiors in the federal government who find these young, smart people, and you see this happening too, where I won't call them so much vampires, but they, you know, they have this whole cabal of these young, ambitious people, and they kind of feed off of their brilliance, their achievements, and take a lot of credit for it. So in that respect, you have that going on with the Alexander Fallsworth character, who starts out as a really fantastic guy, And that's another thing. People aren't always what they seem.
Yeah, and I could definitely relate. And the reason I was asking you that based on your own experiences, I just went over 20 years of federal service. 2 months ago, I've worked for U.S. Coast Guard and the Veterans Administration, and the accumulation has put me over 20 years. And I definitely know exactly everything you just said I can relate to. And, you know, a few years ago, I went part-time because I just didn't want to. I wasn't one of those people to want to go up the food chain. You know, despite, you know, stabbing other people in the back, that's just not who I was. So I went to a part-time role so I could do more stuff like this and focus on inspirational, you know, shows, write my book, you know, that kind of journey. And so I took a step back and went the opposite direction, but I can definitely relate to what you're saying with over 20 years of experience in the federal government. And it's a very interesting journey. So in your book, you talk that you dedicate this book to your mother, your cousin, and Santa. And I'm just curious why Santa is part of this.
Mike, you know what? I come from a Sicilian family, and my mother's name is literally Santa. It's Santa.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize people wouldn't. Although I love Santa Claus more than anybody, and firmly believe in his existence. My mother was my real-life Santa Claus, because she was, you know, a wonderful mother. And, and if you go to rural Sicily, you will find a lot of women named Santa.
See, I'm just learning all. That's why I do these shows, because I learn so much. Because it says to my mother, comma. So I figured it was to mother, comma, Santa, comma, uh-huh. And my cousin, Arnett. So, and I have been to Sicily. I was in Sicily a couple years ago for a couple weeks and loved Cefalù. Went to Cefalù and spent a couple days in Cefalù. And then. Yeah, and then toured all around. Started off in Malta and then took the ferry over to Sicily and spent a couple weeks there and really enjoyed it. Did some scuba diving and really had a
great
trip.
Did you climb the rock?
I did not, no. But I know what you're talking about. Just didn't have enough time on the agenda to get to. But loved Sicily, loved visiting. I visited a lot of Italy, so I visited pretty much every part of Italy in the last decade or so. But I did not realize that Santa was an actual popular name there in Sicily. So again, I learn all sorts of new things doing these shows. So let's talk about the premise of your book, The Silent Count. And you can, again, for our listeners, you can go out. Now, I was just given the link to Amazon. I'm sure it's probably out there on some other sites as well. So I don't know if you wanted to shout those out real quick, but we do have it. We do have your website listed, and we do have the book link directly at Inspired Living Radio and Podcast over on our Facebook page if you want to get to those for our Inspired listeners. Is there any other links or any other sites that you wanted to give a shout out to that your book is listed on?
Oh, sure. Yeah, thanks. It is on Amazon. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. It's not in the Barnes & Noble store, so don't go looking for it there, unfortunately. There's something called bookshop.org, booksamillion.com. So it's on these major sites. And in the Washington, D.C. area, for your listeners in D.C., it's actually at a pretty well-known bookstore called Politics and Prose, and they also have online shopping. So if you order it from there, you know, you'd be supporting a small local bookstore. So, you know, there's lots of options.
Yeah, I love that. Imagine that, a store called Politics and Prose in Washington, D.C.
And they have Busboys and Poets, too. It's not there, but there's a lot of reading in the D.C. area, for sure.
Yeah. Our Barnes & Noble, which used to be right down the street, actually went out of business. The actual physical store, the brick-and-mortar store, actually went out of business, which was sad to see. So a lot of it's just gone to the online. But let's talk about The Silent Count, how it was inspired by a real textbook in valid science. What textbook are you referring to?
Yeah. Oh, this is what I was talking about with the my nuclear engineering textbook in my undergraduate, where it said on the first page that nuclear weapons could be used for this cockamamie scheme to eliminate certain mountain ranges. This is actually part of a Eisenhower program. It was called Project Plowshares, and they were trying to push, you know, that, oh, there's atoms for peace, you know, peaceful uses of nuclear weapons. There's, you know, in the Soviet Union, they had something similar, and they actually went through with some of these schemes. For example, they made an artificial lake in Kazakhstan using a nuclear weapon. And I don't know if you remember when there was that oil well that blew up in the Gulf and in the United States, in the Gulf area near Texas, I guess. And
are you talking deep water or deep
yeah,
water?
Deep,
or
right.
Deep water.
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were saying that one of the ways that you could stop the fire was to throw a nuclear weapon into the mix. And that's actually true. You could. But no one's saying that you should, you know, but you could.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's all kinds of interesting applications for massive, massive detonation. But, you know, you have to really think about how you're going to move forward. Now, in the book, they choose a mountain range in Alaska. They're going to implode it in from underground, and they're going to reposition the jet stream. And all that, I guess it could happen, you know, if you really did that, it might work. But as I said, a little bit of a satire here. It's just to kind of point to some larger truths about our crazy world.
Right. Well, and again, who's to say, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years from now that what you're writing about today, you know, as cli-fi or, you know, science fiction becomes science fact. We've seen that over and over and over again. In fact, you know, last year, we're not talking about this enough, but we actually have been able to harness the power of fusion for the first time in our, you know, talking about, you know, science in late December last year. They actually were able to harness the first theories of fusion, which is harnessing the core of the sun's energy without actually having to create that type of fuel source, which is a very, you know, transformative thing to talk about. So the science that you have written about in this book and the science you learned about years ago has since changed, you know, because I like how you said valid science, because we use the scientific method and we use valid science. And there's a new movie coming out that I'm excited to see here in the next couple months from Christopher Nolan, and it's The Journey of Oppenheimer. So it's the biography of Oppenheimer, who helped develop the first atomic bomb. And I think it's going to be a really powerful insight to, you know, how the bomb was first created, that went from, you know, the atom bomb to then the nuclear bomb, and how we're the only country in the world to ever drop two atom bombs on another country, right? So it's going to be, as more information comes out and more technology evolves, I guess, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if what you wrote about today actually becomes science fact in the future, changing the Gulf Stream, you know, changing, you know, the testing procedures that we do know about and the testing procedures that we don't know about.
Yes. First of all, I agree. I cannot wait for that Oppenheimer movie. I think I might be the target audience for it.
No, I'll join you. We'll get a tub of popcorn and we can watch it together, because I love Christopher Nolan, his movie, his ability to be a storyteller.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some really good actors in it. So Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon, Rami Malek, they're all, you know, actors in this movie coming out. I'm not sure if it comes out next month or this month, but it is coming out, and it's going to reflect on the team of scientists during the Manhattan Project that led to the development of the atomic bomb. And there's going to be some powerful truths in there. And I say that because, as a numerology, you know, expert, we're in the year of truth. We're in 2023, and we're talking about this. And there's going to be a lot more truths that come out, including, you know, nuclear capabilities and the things that we're doing. So, EA, what do you feel about climate change? Is it too late for us? Is there, you know, I always believe in hope, and, you know, I always promote hope, but with everything that's going on in our world and what we do know of and what we don't know of, is with climate change, is it too late for us?
Well, I also believe in hope. I'm very hopeful. And I, you know, you're talking about the Manhattan Project. You know, two of the, I think, my favorite books of all time were The Making of the Atomic Bomb by Richard Rhodes, and the sequel, The Dark Sun, The Making of the Hydrogen Bomb, also by Richard Rhodes. So I think the whole story of the Manhattan Project, and I know nuclear weapons, people say, well, we'd be so much better off if we didn't have them, possibly. But, you know, it's been a deterrent in a lot of ways during the Cold War, for example. It served as a deterrent. So people can say various things about them, and everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I like to think that technology can help us, you know, move forward in all these different ways, in ways that we can't even anticipate. Because think about it, you know, did we have our iPhones, you know, what was it, 15, 20 years ago? No. There's so much that we didn't have or didn't even conceive that everybody would end up just having all over the world, making life so much easier for us. I also, I guess I'm really blessed because I have a really brilliant young nephew, and I've watched him grow up, and he's now, you know, a terrific student at Virginia Tech studying AI and machine learning, and he just got a great summer internship. So I see so much value in young people coming up with their hopes and dreams and talent. And I know that there's some, you know, few really smart kids in that group that are going to send it, you know, just like make this all go away. I mean, we might have other problems that we're dealing with in the future, but I think the technology is going to set us free. Unfortunately, the political world is just going to stand in the way for a lot of it, but eventually I think technology is going to help us. That's my dream, at least.
Yeah, so let's take our first break. Let's go to our first break. We're going to come back, and we're going to pick that up and talk about technology, AI, the internet, because we're in a new age of the Renaissance, and there's a lot more to talk about. So we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with our special guest, E.A. Smeraldo, talking about her new novel, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes on Inspired Living Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
One planet, 7.3 billion people. Only one you. Life offers us many opportunities and learning experiences. Are you ready to explore and discover this beautiful planet, the life and energy all around us, the spiritual world, and what is unseen, along with your own personal soul adventure? Mark Lanehart, the intuitive prospector, is the spiritual connection you have been prospecting for. Internationally known as a tested and professional clairvoyant medium and spiritual advisor, Mark's work as a metaphysical teacher, medical instructor, radio show host, inspirational writer, and hiking guide are here to help you on a journey of self-discovery, healing, inspiration, education, and a whole lot of spiritual awesomeness. Dare to dream. Dare to explore. Dare to live. For more information on Mark's spiritual practice in Seattle, Washington, please visit marklanehart.com or internet search The Intuitive Prospector.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to Inspired Living. Ernest Hemingway, author, reminds us the earth is a fine place and worth fighting for. And one of my favorite Native American proverbs talks about, quote, "We do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. we borrow it from our children, end quote. Welcome back to Inspired Living. Our special guest today, E.A. Shmerlda, talking with her new novel, her first novel release called The Silent Count. It is a cli-fi climate change fiction thriller that you'll want to check out. And we were just talking, EA, about technology. We were just talking about AI. Most people don't realize that the internet has only been available to the public for about 30 years now. So back on April 30th, 1993, it was released out to the public. And it came with a lot of hysteria, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of questions. The internet's been around, the concept has been around since the 80s, early 80s, but it wasn't until about 10 years later that it was released out to the public. And we're kind of right now in that same scenario that AI, artificial intelligence, has been worked on by academia and science probably for the last good 15 years, and it's now been released out to the public. So it's interesting that I think you said your nephew, did you say your nephew is studying at Virginia Tech with AI? Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's interesting because AI has just within the last few weeks been released out, whether it was Google or ChatGPT or Apple or BART through Microsoft. So the AI is kind of the same concept of what the internet did 30 years ago. And we're going to see a lot of interesting things taking place. Do you have any opinion on how that might impact the science of nuclear capabilities and everything that's going on with our world?
Well, scientifically, you know, so I think I mentioned I used to work for the federal government, but then I left the federal government and I have my own consulting practice now. And I see all kinds of technologies in my practice, which is a wonderful thing. I see fusion occasionally, and every so often something comes across that AI is like a tool, I guess, in what I see. For example, you know, you can use a drone to get to photograph the inside of your nuclear reactor to keep it, and then the AI goes through the video and can tell where there might be problems, things like areas of corrosion or areas of, you know, something else that might lead to a safety issue. So there's lots of applications for AI as a tool. And I like to think of that just in general in the world. You know, people worry that, oh, AI is going to take over and, you know, there's not going to be any place for, you know, writers or artists or whatever. But I don't agree with that. I think you're always going to need a human being to have the inspiration, and maybe the AI can do the perspiration part of the, you know, 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. So anyway, I like to think that, you know, AI is a tool, but I don't know that it can, I just don't know that it can really come up with something brand new yet.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's because we bring the term sentient, right? It's not conscious, it's not sentient yet, but there's been a lot of, you know, and there, of course, when there's something new, there's always a lot of fear-mongering and doom and gloom that comes with that, just like it was the internet, right? There's always going to be the good things of the internet and, of course, the bad things of the internet because it's run by humans, right? And AI is, you know, I've already seen a lot of positive things, you know, giving voice to people that can't, like somebody with Lou Gehrig's that can't talk. Giving them a voice, or like you said, to be able to go in and inspect a nuclear core safely. I mean, there's going to be some very transformative things. But it was interesting that the godfather of AI, who worked for Google, actually resigned from Google just within the last 2 weeks, so he could actually go out and start talking about this. So that's been interesting because I'm sure he had an NDA that he couldn't discuss. You know, working for Google. So I always kind of just keep an eye on that. You know, in the book, I know you talked a little bit about the energy, and I know we've just discovered the first basic concepts of fusion, which I think is going to be quite transformative for our future, both here on the planet, the sustainability of the planet, but as we start to make our way out into space. And I know, you know, with Elon Musk, you know, either love him or hate him, he's a very, you know, interesting gentleman in our society, but he talks about that we're running the most dangerous experiment in history right now. And it's to see how much carbon dioxide that the atmosphere can handle before there's an environmental catastrophe. But I can tell you, just in, you know, my days in the Coast Guard and being on the high seas for, you know, I served for 8 years and was in some of the most roughest places on the planet in my journey. And I can tell you just the oceans have changed since I've been out, and that's been 20 years ago. So we're seeing the effects of climate change. But in the book, we talk about hope not being lost, but you also talked about think of energy and fuel as expensive now. Just wait. What did you mean by that?
So first of all, I just want to mention that I wrote this book over a period of years. Like, I would start writing and then I would stop writing. And the thing is that things that were really happening going even faster than the future that I wanted to present in the book. But I think we're seeing that, you know, fuel just keeps getting more and more expensive. And we've got to consider that, you know, I know people want to eliminate fossil fuels, but there are entire countries, not just in the United States, parts of the United States, but, you know, there's entire countries where their whole GDP is based on fossil fuels. So that's why I'm hoping that there's one of those brilliant kids I was talking about will come up with either carbon capture or just something maybe these countries that depend on fossil fuels for their economy, or those that use coal or whatever, that they can come up with some way to do so safely, or maybe find another to transition to something else so that they can have an economy. I mean, because you think about it, you know, we've had problems with terrorism, we've had problems with all kinds of things. If these people don't have an economy to go back to, war, you know, famine, disease, these things are going to dwarf any problems we have with climate change, I think. But that sounds not hopeful, but I'm hopeful that we can do something about it.
Right. Well, one is maybe we could take the politics out of it. Politics blocks a lot of, you know, the red tape. You know, being in the federal government for several years, you always hear about red tape. And for our listeners out there, the red tape concept goes back to you in the day when you could actually go up to the White House. I'm talking, you know, 100 years ago. You could actually go up to the White House and you're given a piece of red tape to wait in line to actually talk with the president. And so that's, you know, there's just a lot of red tape when it comes to our climate. And I hopefully will gain some enlightenment and wisdom to say, hey, you know, there's only one planet that we know of. I mean, we know that there's a lot of planets out there in our solar system and our universe, but we don't have the ability to travel there. So we need to start reflecting and looking upon our planet here and how to better take care of it. And one of the interesting things, because I do a lot of traveling when I'm not doing radio and when I'm not doing my job, I travel. And we just spent some days up in Iceland. And what they're doing up in Iceland, which is, you know, when people hear Iceland, they think that, you know, this is a country covered in ice. It actually isn't. That's Greenland. So they're actually opposite. Greenland is covered in ice. Iceland is actually a very sustainable economy. It's the smallest economy in the world. It's the smallest independent economy. And that's what you're just talking about, the economy. But what Iceland is doing is they're taking all of their heat from their volcanoes, from their water, and they're turning that heat into fuel, into heating sources. They're actually sustainable because they're seeing climate change at the top of the planet there firsthand, and the effects of climate change. And it was just fascinating to learn about all they're doing for sustainability and clean energy, but also to be able to keep that economy because that's, you know, the resources and the economy do go hand in hand. So if you get a chance to go to Iceland, check it out. It's definitely a country worth visiting and experiencing. It's beautiful too. Absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did go to Iceland some years ago, and it was really just like it was like a being on another planet in a way.
It sure was.
Because I don't think creation is quite done with it. You know, like you've got geysers just spouting and you know, everything's just very wild. And it was a really magnificent place. And it did strike me that, so they are blessed with a lot of like hot springs and underground flows of natural gas, steam, I guess, you know, so they, geothermal energy is something that they are very blessed to have. There unfortunately are countries that have basically almost no indigenous sources of energy. You know, countries, I'm thinking of like a country like Armenia, for example, which does have a nuclear power plant, but, you know, during the 90s, there was a terrible earthquake, and so they had to shut down the nuclear power plant. Well, people were dying of exposure because they did not have enough heat in the winter. I think in the winter, they might have a little tiny bit in the north of hydropower, but in the summer, all the rivers are dry and they don't have anything. So, you know, so a country like Iceland is great. I wish all of us could have that. You know, we'd all be in a really good shape. But, you know, every country is different, though. So what works for one country isn't going to work for another country. So I know the United Nations gets together and they want everybody to sign on and do their part. And countries do sign on, but then you think, well, how is this really going to play out in reality? So, and then you've got the other side of the coin where people say, well, we should just, you know, pay them, you know, just run their economy for them in terms of our, like, a nice big socialist world with everyone just paying for countries that don't have a GDP and just have a happy, really, there's people that want to have a happiness index. I'm all for happiness. I am. But I guess I'm a little more realist thinking that, you know, we need to plan. We really do for reality. But again, there's so much that we don't know just because technology changes so quickly. So everyone's going to have a different opinion on this. And I know there's a lot of folks that just they don't want nuclear power. Nuclear power, by the way, doesn't give off any carbon emissions. But, you know, there's the fossil fuel, renewable power, which I think we need all of it. You know, we just have a mix of different sources in case one of them, you know, in case the sun doesn't shine one day or the wind doesn't go one day. But, you know, we're still, you know, those technologies are dependent on subsidies still. So even though it's much cheaper, it just needs more time. You know, and the batteries are all from mines that are not indigenous to us mostly, and we've got to depend on other countries like China. I wish I had a better concrete answer, but there's so many shades of gray to this problem.
Yeah, and you talked about, you know, if France can make climate headway, then the U.S. can too. What was some of the examples that we talked about France?
France has about, I think it's between 75% and 80% of their power is from nuclear reactors, and they've been doing it for years, and they've been doing it safely, and they actually are building storage for their spent nuclear fuel, so. You know, and they, I know that they've recycled fuel in the past. I don't think they do it now, but I know that France has had a really, and India has, they recycle fuel there, and they want to go to using thorium instead of uranium for their fuel. So we've got other countries that are using technology that was developed in the United States and invented here, really taking the ball and running with it. So I'd like to think that, you know, there's options out there.
And with your experience, you know, in nuclear engineering, did they talk during your studies? Did they talk about fusion at all? Was that, I know probably at that time it was more of a hypothesis or a theory, but now that we actually have, you know, concrete evidence that fusion is, you know, a capable fuel source, did you learn about fusion at all during your schooling?
You know, I hate to say it, but we learned a little bit about it, but it was, I think, in the context of weapons, because, you know, thermonuclear bombs, they use a fusion. There's a fusion component to them. That's why they're so huge. So, that was sort of my learnings of it. You know, you learn a little bit about, in theory, this is something that we've been working on, and of course, for so many years, it's been, well, in another 50 years, we'll have this, and another X number of years, we'll have it. And it never really materialized. We still need more time for it because...
Oh, sure, sure.
I think, there's... You know, but it can be done. You know, I think now they see that it can be done. It just needs... There's some more work that needs to be done. In my work, more of what I'm seeing is things like, you need to create the tritium for it. So that's sort of the fuel that's used for it, that's what's needed. So, you know, time will pass, and we'll probably start to see more and more. Sometimes, but you never know. There might be, you know, people talk about creating energy from little hydrogen is one thing, just from water. I mean, there's all kinds of things that people are dreaming up that 100 years from now, who knows? You know, 100 years ago, we barely had automobiles.
Yeah, so, true. Yeah, I did a past show where I talked about the Renaissance that we're going to be going through, and renaissances usually happen after pandemics, and we know that we just had a global pandemic that lasted, you know, almost 3 years and killed 8 million people around the globe. And this renaissance that we're going to experience, we talk about how we're going to transform and move faster in the next 30 years than we have the last 300 years. And what I love about what you just said is the advancement of technology, AI. I think about the microchip, the silicone used in microchips, and how that, you know, evolved the computer system to what we use today, and the microchips that are used in our cars, in our houses. And I think it's just a matter of time before those, you know, new inventions around energy. Gene Roddenberry talked about fusion back in the 60s, because fusion was one of the ways of using hyperdrive to actually go through and experience the universe at the warp speed, if you will. That's a part of fusion. And so here we are talking today, you know, 60 years later, 70 years later, and we actually have the first concepts of fusion. But with anything, it's going to evolve and get better over time. Like you said, we didn't just start with, you know, we went from buggy, horse and buggy to the early cars to look at what the cars are today. So 100 years from now is going to be very interesting to see where we're at. The Jetsons, if you will, flying cars and exploring the universe, as long as we can take care of our planet. Because if there's no planet, then we don't get to do any of this fun stuff. So what was your favorite part? Because I know a lot of this story of the Silent Count is also, you know, using your experiences and your education. And, you know, you talk about, you know, Washington, D.C., being a Washington, D.C. native, they wanted me to come work in Washington, D.C., and that's probably why I'm in the other Washington, because that's as far from D.C. as I can get because of that cutthroat mentality of, you know, a politically driven city. But in your experiences of writing this story, what's been the favorite part about releasing your first novel? What's been the joys, the ups and the downs, the editing process? You know, because it's your first novel, and I'm sure you have more novels on the way.
Well, there will be a sequel. I have to just get my act together and finish writing it. But anyway, I think following my character's journey, how she starts out, kind of, she's in not a good place when the novel starts. I mean, she's, you know, her career is not going well. Her father has a gambling problem. She's got all this student loan debt. You know, she's broken up with her fiance. So, and she wants to try to stay friends with him, but you know how that is when it's your first relationship. So she's young and she's kind of learning. But I think as time goes on in the novel, then she just sort of opens her eyes and realizes that she's a lot more powerful than she thinks she is, and eventually stands up to this person who may or may not be using her for, as I said, things go off the rails. So she stands up to the villain in the story. So I think that the fun of the novel was, you know, my plot, it has a huge, massive twist in the middle. And I think people are going to be pretty shocked when they find out what that is. So that's been really fun to talk to people and have them tell me, you know, and then they were really, everyone seems to have a different take on it, but they just are really enjoying it. You know, people have really been wonderful in their praise for it. So that's been a really good feeling. I've won some awards. You know, mostly a political thriller, is because they don't have sci-fi categories, and it's not so, you know, science not fiction yet. Is usually like your Star Trek and so forth, or Star Wars. It's not quite, there's no aliens in it or anything. So it's won several first prize in a couple of different contests, and it was shortlisted for something called a Chanticleer Global Thriller Award. So anyway, that's been really great. I signed books at the LA Times Festival of Books. That was really fun. I got to go to LA and do that.
Nice.
I have a really wonderful, you know, my publicist has found some great opportunities. I've asked to judge a novel writing contest and a short fiction writing contest. So that's been really fun too. So there's been so many wonderful surprises.
Yeah.
Well, being on podcasts and radio programs. So like, thank you. This is wonderful. I love it.
Well, congratulations on all your success. I love to see people be successful. And remember, there wasn't always a sci-fi category, just like there's no cli-fi category yet. But who's to say 5 years from now that actually becomes a thing? And you inspire other writers to start writing about our planet. And, you know, I go back to, you know, even, you know, thinking back to, you know, Al Gore, who back in 2006... An Inconvenient Truth. We were talking about this all the way back in 2006. Now, I know I mentioned the name Al Gore, and that's the politics of it. But, you know, one of the quotes that always stood out with me, and I believe this is a voice that you're contributing to as well, is he said, quote, "Believe in the power of your own voice. The more noise you make, the more accountability you demand from your leaders, the more our world will change for the better," end quote. And that's from, you know, Al Gore, who really saw this back in 2006 and made a movie, The Inconvenient Truth, to start having conversations about such topics as climate change, climate warming, you know, creating new categories like cli-fi, even though this is a fictional thriller novel. It gets people thinking. It gets people talking. And I know in here you talked about, you know, the book is satire, but it's the same spirit as the movies Don't Look Up. And that really, actually, I watched that and it disturbed the heck out of me. It was just like, seriously, this is, if you haven't seen Don't Look Up, I don't know if that's on Netflix or where that was. There's so many streaming services these days, but it was very disturbing. But it is that cautionary tale that we need to think about our choices now and what we're doing and keep having these conversations, including podcasts. And I look forward to your sequel. Let us know when your sequel comes out. But just with the time that we have left, EA, what or who inspires you, and what do you want to take away from today's show to inspire our listeners out there?
I'm always, every time I hear about somebody who's just overcome so much to get to where they are, you know, those people always inspire me. And there's no shortage of them. I mean, you know, my parents, you know, my mom, my dad, they came from abject poverty in Sicily. They didn't have any education that they could come to America and, you know, make a life for themselves. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that gets me going, because I thought, well, look what they had to go through, and here I am. And it was all paved, you know, the road was paved for me in a lot of ways, although I had to work really hard. But, you know, I had parents who showed me that dreams can come true, you know, just so that's kind of where I am. I know it sounds corny, but I hold that in my heart. And that's why my mom is one of my folks that I dedicated my book
Santa.
To. Yes, Santa. Yes.
And I learned her name is Santa. So, well, she's proud of you. She's watching all of this take place right now in real time, and she's only ever a thought away, as I remind people. So, well, EA, it's been fun talking with you today. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing this thriller, cli-fi, The Silent Count, with us. Again, you can go to her website at EASmeraldo.com. You can find the book. The links are on our page at Inspired Living Radio and Podcasts, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, just type in the silent count, and I'm sure it'll pull up for wherever you're at in the world. And I just want to leave us today with a quote from Leonardo DiCaprio, who's not only an actor and makes a lot of money as an A-lister in Hollywood, but he's also an environmentalist. And he says this: climate change is real. It is happening right now, and it is the most urgent threat facing our entire species, and we need to work collectively together and stop procrastinating. And I hope that this book, The Silent Count, will put some vibrations and some ripple effects out there to get people to pay attention and to start acting and having conversations to make real change in our world. Because, again, there's only one planet right now, one planet Earth, and I want to continue to be here and watch future generations flourish for what's to come in our future. So, EA, thank you so much for being on Inspired Living. We really appreciate you. And when you get that sequel written, come back and we'll pick up the sequel for you. All right, my friend?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Until our next soul adventure together, be kind, caring, and compassionate. And wherever you're at in this world, dare to dream, dare to explore, dare to live, and discover that diamond within. We'll see you next time here on Inspired Living. Take care, everybody. Namaste.